Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kathy Karcher and I represent the appellant Robert Simpson. The district court erred in two respects when it dismissed Robert Simpson's amended complaint on collateral estoppel grounds. First, the district court erred in ruling that Mr. Simpson was not denied his full and fair opportunity to litigate his claims on the basis that he waived his right to counsel in his prior criminal proceedings. And second,
because it was a criminal case, he had the opportunity to have a lawyer appointed for him. He chose, in a manner that I take it you're not challenging directly, to represent himself. We all know that's usually a foolish decision, but in any event, he made that decision. And all the rest of the criteria are obviously satisfied. The trial, the state court considered the precise issue, made a ruling on the precise issue. So, but I don't see where the opportunity was missing. Unlike many cases, many of the civil cases which you cited where the people were pro se and they didn't have the same kind of rights to have.
Well, under Illinois law, collateral estoppel is an equitable principle, and to the court below, we did raise several considerations that the district court did not address in its opinion. In fact, it appears that the district court is setting forth a bright line rule here that a litigant can never be deprived of the full and fair opportunity to litigate if there was a waiver of the right to counsel in a prior criminal proceeding, no matter what the circumstances. And looking at
the trial court, you know, just said, I'm not going to rule on it. I mean, you know, it seems to me there are many instances that are somewhat different where you might have found a lack of an opportunity to litigate a case. But here, where we have everything else in place, and maybe it is a rather bright line rule, but if you have state-appointed counsel at your disposal, he in fact has standby counsel, right, even though it's unclear how much he's probably supposed to be doing, he could have relied on that person.
His standby counsel served in a very limited role, basically running errands for him, but Mr. Simpson was responsible for the discovery, the questioning of witnesses, all of his legal strategy, and preserving the record on appeal to suitability. He was able to do that. We're not saying here that the fact that he was pro se is the be-all and end-all of this analysis, but there's certainly a number of factors that the district court should have taken into account, including the seriousness and complexity of the underlying proceeding. It was a capital murder trial. In addition to that, we point to his complete lack of formal education or training in the law, as well as a history of mental impairment that was not before the trial judge at the time that Mr. Simpson purportedly waived his right to counsel, but came out later, and that appears to be quite significant. That came out later when he did have counsel that requested his medical file from the prison, and that included a gunshot wound to his head, fainting spells, dizziness, bad headaches, bad eyesight, and also several experts submitted affidavits in the post-conviction review, and they found that at minimum he suffered from attention deficit disorder, possibly with hyperactivity, but he also, they found based on his mannerisms and speech that he suffered from impulsive decision-making and poor judgment, and these are some of the equitable factors we submit should be considered when looking at collateral estoppel under Illinois law. Looking at the Stiles case, which is an Illinois appellate court decision, there an individual was found to have been denied of the full and fair opportunity to litigate when a motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence had been decided against her in a trial, and the same issues were raised in a later trial involving the same arrest and the same statements, and the court allowed that motion to be brought on the same issue, and we submit that if incompetent counsel suffices to satisfy this exception, then incompetent self-representation should also be a consideration. Now, out of the cases we cited, the one criminal case we cited admittedly, pardon me, Your Honor? That's correct, Your Honor.
Another trial, the lawyer, maybe with yourself again,
No, Your Honor. The distinction here is Mr. Simpson is not challenging his conviction or his sentence. He's seeking monetary damages for an unlawful arrest. I would disagree respectfully, Your Honor, with that characterization, because here, I understand, Your Honor. Citing to the Davis versus City of Charleston case, which is the criminal case we were able to find in the Eighth Circuit, the litigant brought Section 1983 claims for unlawful arrest when she was arrested for disturbing the peace. And the Eighth Circuit rejected the argument that collateral estoppel barred the claim for unlawful arrest simply because Ms. Davis was convicted there, and relied on the fact that she was a pro se litigant in the underlying proceeding. The district court did not look at all at the undisputed facts that Mr. Simpson is not an attorney and doesn't have training in the law, and particularly in this type of... we certainly are not taking that position, and we don't advocate a bright line rule. It is a consideration that should be taken into account, particularly under circumstances here. No, Your Honor, that's not the position we're taking. Just simply that under collateral estoppel, the court can look at equitable factors that that may have. Well, returning to the point I made earlier, Your Honor, regarding the distinction that this is a Section 1983 action for monetary damages versus a challenge to the underlying conviction.
The point is, he's trying to get a procedural advantage from the decision not to proceed with a lawyer.
Well, what the habeas court noted was that Mr. Simpson, at his trial, failed to call the prosecutors who witnessed the alleged consents to search his apartment, and he also failed to call at his pretrial hearing the individual who allegedly consented. And in the second habeas... Mr. Simpson is not seeking a procedural advantage, but as indicated by... in seeking his claims for unlawful arrest and for the entry into his apartment, the habeas court noted in its second opinion that it didn't need to address the consent to enter his apartment, and it focused only on the search of the storage locker, because evidence was ultimately seized from there and not seized from the apartment. However, Mr. Simpson is seeking damages for the unlawful entry into his apartment, and this is a claim that will not get proper attention unless it comes forward before the district court here. He's seeking damages for the invasion into his right to privacy, and that simply is not addressed on any direct challenge to the conviction. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Condon. I represent the Village of Riverdale defendants in this case. I'm also going to be presenting arguments on behalf of the other defendants in the matter, the Village of Glenwood defendants and the Cook County State's Attorney defendants. The district court properly held in this case that the doctrine of collateral estoppel applied to bar plaintiff's Fourth Amendment unreasonable search and seizure claims. I would note initially that the plaintiff appellant in this case concedes in their brief that the threshold requirements of collateral estoppel have been met. I would also note
that... that instance, I take it there would be no issue preclusion problems in later civil cases.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that interpretation. And in this instance, clearly, Mr. Simpson did bring a motion to suppress, motion to quash his arrest, and to suppress the evidence that was obtained as a result of his arrest. I would also note that in the brief, it appears that the plaintiff is also conceding that Mr. Simpson made a voluntary decision to waive counsel in this case. I believe what we're left with, Your Honors, really is the decision or the argument on plaintiff's part that Mr. Simpson was not competent to represent himself. Initially, with respect to the argument of competency, that issue has been addressed by the Illinois Supreme Court in the Simpson 1 case. I would quote from the Illinois Supreme Court in their opinion where they state, quote, viewing the record in its entirety, it is evident that the trial judge had ample opportunity in the pretrial proceedings to observe defendant and assess his ability to understand the proceedings. The record indicates the defendant was literate, responsive, and understanding. Defendant at age 39 had extensive criminal history. He had demonstrated a familiarity with the judicial process, and according to the trial judge, had waived counsel and represented himself on a prior occasion.
What the Illinois Supreme Court and you even are saying is whatever actual mental problems Mr. Simpson may have had were mild enough that they weren't, I mean, it's not like he was lying on the floor drooling during the trial or something that would have been apparent to one and all because it couldn't continue. I assume at that point the court would have stepped in and said, let you represent yourself. And we're left with just the usual gap that pro se Feretta defendants make, failing to preserve error, failing to put things in post-trial motion, which, you know, inevitably prejudice their cases.
And the appellees would agree with that, Your Honor. In this instance, I believe that the trial court and the Illinois Supreme Court, in its review of the entire record in the state criminal proceedings, that they're in the best position to determine whether or not Mr. Simpson was in a position to waive his right to counsel and whether he was competent to do that.
So would you say, I mean, would you agree that you are in fact asking for a very bright line rule? Anybody who's competent enough to waive representation in a criminal trial suffer the issue preclusion effects as a result of that trial and later civil litigation?
Your Honor, we would not be asking for a bright line rule that in all cases that should be the law. There are certainly exceptional circumstances that may exist in a state criminal proceeding where the defendant, if it's determined by the trial court and upon review in the state criminal proceedings, that the defendant did not have the mental capacity to waive his right to counsel. The record was reviewed by the trial judge in this case and by the Illinois Supreme Court, and the court found that Mr. Simpson was competent to represent himself. He filed all sorts of motions in the state criminal case. He filed a motion to quash his arrest and suppress evidence. He filed motions with respect to certain evidence that he wanted excluded. I believe that the Illinois Supreme Court, in reviewing that, said that Mr. Simpson clearly knew what he was doing and clearly was competent to represent his interests. And at one point, I think it's certainly worth noting that Mr. Simpson complained about his court-appointed standby counsel. And the Illinois Supreme Court noted that while Mr. Simpson complained about the court-appointed counsel, he never said to the trial judge, well, I now want to no longer represent myself. I want new court-appointed counsel to represent me. He never did that. So as Judge Posner noted earlier, this is really a circumstance where Mr. Simpson wants his cake and eat it too. He wanted to proceed in the state criminal proceedings, represent himself pro se, And then when he was convicted of murdering these people, now he wants to come back, and he went before the Illinois Supreme Court in post-conviction proceedings and said, well, now I'm not competent to represent myself. The Illinois Supreme Court rejected that. I do not believe that Your Honor's... In Simpson 1, it's my understanding that he did challenge his conviction on the grounds that he could not adequately represent himself. And in Simpson 1, the Illinois Supreme Court rejected that.
And is that over with?
Yes, that is final. Well, it's final before the Illinois Supreme Court. There was a habeas that was pending before the district court here, and the district court denied Mr. Simpson's habeas petition. I believe it is on appeal from the record. I would submit that counsel representing Mr. Simpson could better advise the court.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Your Honors, in answer to the question, the appeal is pending before this court right now on the habeas decision. That's at 043044. The opening brief has not yet been filed. That is due March 10th, and our firm has just been appointed to handle that. And follow up to counsel's point, here, although Mr. Simpson's not challenging the waiver of the right to counsel, that is a point of contention on the habeas. I want to clarify that. Also, citing back to the habeas court, that court was concerned about the evidence that came in later regarding Mr. Simpson's competence, noting that it's rather difficult to believe that the trial judge would have handled the self-representation issue the same way had he been aware that Simpson suffered from a mental impairment or disorder. And the habeas noted that he was, or the habeas court, excuse me, noted that he was troubled by some of the evidence that came in later. Thank you, Your Honor. Yes.